How many of you enjoy shopping? Yes, shopping, whether it's for clothes, stereos, jewelry, cars, you name it. How about going to the store to get stuff to fix your car, to maybe do some repair work on the house? All of that's involved in retail. Well, retail, the retail industry isn't quite what it used to be. It's hurting. And for that reason, Mr. Mark Pilkington, an experienced retail chief executive, retail strategy consultant based in the UK, has written a book entitled Retail Therapy, Why the Retail Industry is Broken and What Can Be Done to Fix It. And he is going to share all of that with us now. And Mark, it is so good to have you with us. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. It's really great to be with you today.
Thank you, sir. Truly my pleasure to have you, too. This is something that is near and dear to my heart. You know, I spent a little bit of time in the retail industry some years ago and still have an affection for it. And so when I read your book, I came away a bit encouraged by what you left us with. So, but Mark, if you could, before you begin to get into the book and tell us more about retail, how it got its start, where it is now, where it might end up if things don't change, and how it can revive itself. If you could tell us more about yourself and your experience in the retail industry.
Okay, well, I'll start with a few minutes about my background. I think I'm unusual in that I'm actually an economic historian by training, and then I went into the retail business. And I worked at all stages of the supply chain. So I got my start in manufacturing. Then I did a stint in marketing for consumer brands. Then I started a dot-com business. And then finally, I worked as chief executive of a store business with about 800 stores. So I've seen all angles of the business. And also, because of the economic history angle, I can analyze the long-term trends that are affecting it.
That is impressive. That is very impressive. What got you started with economic history and then retail? What sparked the interest?
Well, I think that, you know, I came out of college like a lot of people do, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And I ended up going to business school. And then, you know, at the end of business school, this guy called me up and said, you want to come and work with our group? And, you know, you just start like that. I guess, you know, how do any of us get our start? It's probably a bit random.
And it really worked out for you.
It did. No, it's been a really fun ride.
So you've been through every phase of the retail industry. Were there any parts of it that just kind of that you seemed to gravitate towards more than the other, or did it seem like you were just a good fit for each area of the retail industry that you participated in?
Well, I tended to gravitate towards sales and marketing and product development because I like doing creative things. And then, you know, I ended up actually creating brands myself, like when I started my dot-com. And then later on, when I worked in the retail business, I launched a number of new retail brands. And I really enjoy, you know, having the blank sheet of paper and saying, you know, what's this brand going to be? What's it going to mean? Who are we trying to appeal to? That kind of thing.
Gotcha. So maybe as we go through this sort of timeline of the retail industry, as you're discussing that with us, maybe you can just kind of piece together, just kind of fit in there some of your own experience as you talk about retail, where it's been, where it is now, where it might be going, where it's heading.
No problem.
All right, so can you take us to the beginning and let us know kind of where the world was just before we had an actual retail industry and how where we were led into the startup of those earliest beginnings of retail?
That's a very good place to start. Retailing is actually a surprisingly recent phenomenon. Up until about 250 years ago, there really were very, very few retail stores and very few brands in the sense that we would know them today. What one has to remember is that all the prosperity that we enjoy today is very, very new. And up until the mid-18th century, most people were, in fact, extremely poor. Most people worked in subsistence farming, and most of the goods that they used, they produced for themselves. They grew their own food, they made their own clothes, they built their repaired their shelters themselves. And the few things that were too complicated for them to make for themselves, they usually bought locally, but not from shops, really, from local craft production units where things were made by hand. And they'd go along and the people would make one item for them to their specification and give it to them. The problem with that, of course, it was very expensive. Making things by hand one at a time is incredibly inefficient. And that's why the standard of living was relatively low. And as I say, there were very few shops, and they were mainly for wealthier people. Then in the mid-18th century, the Industrial Revolution came along, and the means of manufacturing changed from being handmade artisanal production to being mass-produced automated factories. And that dramatically reduced the cost of production by about 90%. And it really is responsible for all the prosperity that we enjoy today. But mass-producing standardized goods created its own challenges. For example, the factories wanted to produce things in huge quantities, but people wanted to buy them individually. So how did you square that circle? And the answer was basically shops. Retailers built spaces in busy locations and filled those shops with the output of the factories. And the consumers showed up and bought them and took them away. So it provided a means to link the factories to the consumers. Now, the other thing that changed when the Industrial Revolution changed was that you started to get brand, manufacturers' brand. But because when everything was bought locally from local craft people, the people, the consumers, tended to know the reputation of the craft people. But once you moved to the factories being anywhere in the world and mass production, you didn't have a direct connection with the factories. So how did you know as a consumer whether it was good or not? Well, the answer is you didn't. And in fact, a lot of people got hurt by having defective products in the early stages of industrialization. So what the good factories started to do was they started to stamp their brand name on the goods. And they started to, they got themselves large sales forces so they could sell the product to the retailers. And they started to do mass advertising to convince people that their brand was the best. So that's why you got brands. Now, it's a great system with very low manufacturing costs. There's only one problem. As the product went from the factories down that chain to the brands first, then to the retailers, and then to the consumer, quite a lot of cost was added back into the system. The brands would buy the product from the factories, and just for stamping their name on it, they would triple the price. Then they'd sell it to the retailers, and to cover the cost of their stores and their staff, which are very expensive, they also tripled the price again. And that meant that the consumers were buying product at 7 to 8 times the actual manufacturing cost. And I want to really emphasize that product did not change after it left the factory gate. But just having a brand on it and putting it in this retail space increased the price by 7 or 8 times. So there was a downside to the system that although the manufacturing itself was extremely inexpensive, the distribution system was actually extremely expensive with lots of stages to it and lots of middlemen. Now, the consumers put up with this for 250 years, and that's the system that we all grew up with. So we were still using it 250 years later. Now, why did we accept it? Well, simply, we didn't have any choice. Our choice of retail stores was limited usually to 2 or 3 in the area where we lived. And in terms of brands, we couldn't just buy anything because we had no way of knowing if it was good or not. So we tended to stick to the big established brands with the big advertising budgets and the big PR budget. So we put up with paying all this money in order to get the accessibility of the products and in order to generate the trust that we needed to buy these brands.
Let me ask you a question about that, Mark.
Yeah.
The brands, understandably, are advertising, they're marketing, and one of the things that they're trying to put forth to the consumer is that you can trust us. What we sell to you is going to be of good quality. You won't have any problems with it. Was that something that really bore out when people would buy those products, were they, for the most part, high quality, or were people still having problems with the product but still had no choice but to buy whatever was made available?
Well, I think that a lot of brands were good quality, and the product was very standardized, and they put a lot of emphasis on getting the quality right. But the key point is it was very, very, very expensive, mm-hmm. and because of all these markups that were put onto it. So, people didn't realize that they were paying, that they didn't really get the full benefit of the Industrial Revolution, because although the actual manufacturing cost dropped by 90%, it then got almost built back up again through this long distribution chain. So the major problem with the system was that the quality was probably acceptable, but, it just would be possible to get a much higher quality product if they could have bought it somehow, got it straight from the factories. Mm-hmm. And, of course, this brings us on to the things that have changed recently.
So we'll start with that when we come back. So, ladies and gentlemen, quality is okay, and we know that we really like getting what we pay for. Did they really get what they paid for, though? They got quality, but the price was so high. Would you say that everything still evened out? Well, think about what you're looking for when you buy now. Our guest, Mr. Mark Pilkington, tell you one of the many accomplishments of his. He was responsible for initiating the huge global success of the Wonder Bra. He and I'll be right back.